what you do 80% of the time and trying to change your habits over time. So looking at the principles of Ayurveda, I would say, are more important, and looking at your starting point. Are you doing some sort of movement? What is that movement? Are you breathing properly? Are you happy? If you're not happy, then what can you do to bring about more happiness? So think of your digestion before you do everything, and think of the happiness of your digestion before you think of the happiness of your tongue. Oiling is really, really important generally. So doing some sort of oil massage, massaging the face, maybe massaging the hands, especially in the cold, the joints, maybe the knees. I'm sure there's 100 more things I could come up with, but I would just say looking at food and looking at whole foods and looking at your food patterns and instilling better practices for that.
Welcome to the second episode of the Ikivi Podcast Season 3. In this episode, we have with us Meera Manik, an author, speaker, and founder of the brand Chai by Meera. She is the author behind best-selling cookbooks Saffron Soul and Prajna, based on Ayurveda, rituals, happiness, and mental health. Her third project, Book of Chai, is out in April. In this episode, we speak with her about her journey into the world of cooking and wellness, her inspiration behind making traditional Indian cuisine both nourishing and delicious, and the recipes that bring overall well-being to the mind, body, and soul. We also talk about the perception of Indian food globally, the importance of daily Ayurvedic rituals for happiness, and her upcoming work. We look forward to you being a part of this very insightful conversation. So thank you so much, Meera, for joining us today. I am very excited to get into this conversation. There are a couple of topics that we're going to touch upon. It's something that has been a part of our lives here in India, but at the same time is kind of new and fresh in terms of the popularity of these subjects and people starting to talk a lot about it nowadays, which is also very exciting. But before we get into all the details, you've carved a niche for yourself as a health practitioner and wellness enthusiast in the industry. Where did it all begin? Where did this journey begin for you? And can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Sure. So I think with any of these journeys, you delve inwards and you go on your own health journey because you lose your way in it. And I lost my way in my health. I took it for granted. And then I went on a yo-yo dieting sort of culture, and I got very wrapped into that, doing various diets, whether it's, you know, Weight Watchers or this or that, the other. And I really lost my way in health. And I was chasing being thin over anything else. And I think in my eyes and in my mind, being thin equated to being healthy for a very, very long time. And it sounds now to me very ridiculous, but at the time, that's what made sense to me. And it was when I got to a stage where I was going to India many, many years later, with snacks in my hand, realizing suddenly, and it dawned on me suddenly, that I was like, I grew up eating all this amazing Indian food and I'm coming to India with these snacks, but actually Indian food is healthy. And then I thought, well, people think of Indian food as unhealthy. Why is that? And it was sudden, like a penny drop moment for me. And I thought, oh, I want to actually write a book on healthy Indian food, the food I grew up eating. And that was also one of my lowest points in life. I was going through a divorce. I was about to start on a divorce. I was moving back to my home country. I was from London and I am in London now, but I was moving back because I was living abroad for a few years. And I basically, when I moved back, I started learning the food that I'd grown up eating, things that I hadn't learned, but I always ate and took for granted, and things that I'd stopped eating because, well, for my late teenage, early 20 years, because I thought, oh no, Indian food I can't eat because it's cooked in oil and oil's the enemy. Again, a ludicrous thought now that I really think of it. And that's how the whole journey began. Now that journey, it's something that I didn't really strategically plan out. I didn't strategically plan out that I was going to start a chai brand. I never thought I was writing a book on Ayurveda. I never thought my third book, which is out next year, will be called The Book of Chai. Like, none of that was planned. But I knew from that minute that I wanted to write a book, and that was my first book, about healthy Indian food. And that's how it all began. And what transpired after that was my own health journey, was me finding my way back to happiness, to health, through food, through yoga, through all these rituals that I practice now, and realizing that actually that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. I do want to touch upon a bunch of things that you just mentioned. But before we get into that, I'd love to hear about, I mean, I've always thought Indian food was healthy. Of course, we do have a lot of deep fried goodies as well. But what is the perception of Indian food, and why did you feel like you had to, you know, position it as more of a healthy alternative? Or what was that thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think when people thought of, maybe not so much now, but when people, maybe a decade ago when I started my journey, thought of Indian food, especially in the West, they thought of the food that you eat late at night, like, you know, on the weekend with your beer, and you feel really heavy afterwards, and naan. And it's very defined by one type of Indian cuisine, which is, I guess, Bangladeshi, Punjabi, that sort of cuisine. And obviously, Indian food is much more than that. We all know that. It's like every state of India has different types of food. But equally, it's not that Punjabi food is unhealthy. It's not at all unhealthy. It's about what you eat in a restaurant being very different to what you eat at home. So whether you're Gujarati, Punjabi, or Maharashtra, wherever you're from, what you eat out in a restaurant will not be ghar ka khana, which is what you eat at home. And what people thought of in the West as Indian food, or if they thought, oh, I want to make that curry at home, they would think of that as that rich thing that you eat in a restaurant with lots of gravy and, you know, cream and whatever it is. But actually, when you cook at home, you cook sadhu. Now, sadhu is basically plain food, like simple, few spices, not too oily, not too rich. And therefore, yes, Indian food is healthy. But when you go out and eat that rich stuff, I mean, you can't have that on a daily basis. So that's where I was like, well, people are defining Indian food when they want to recreate it. They want to recreate the recipes they eat in restaurants, not what they can eat at home. And every day you can be eating Indian food. And not only that, but the spice box doesn't need to only come out when you're having Indian food. The spices should be used no matter what you're having. So if you're having a roast vegetable dish that you're putting into the oven, you can sprinkle some cumin seeds on that with the oil. You can put a tadka on that. You can add cinnamon to your, I don't know, whatever it is you're cooking. You can add mustard seeds when you're not even cooking Indian food. It doesn't have to be just the Indian food. You've got to realize that spices add flavor. They add texture. And each and every spice has so many health benefits. So why not use them out of the context of just Indian food?
I love that. I love how you kind of position it as both nourishing as well as delicious. Indian food is that. Can you share with us, you know, some of the, what inspired you to kind of position it like that? And also how is Indian food healthy, and how is it also delicious at the same time?
So Indian food, because of the number of spices, and because of the number of spices, and each spice has its own flavor combination. So when you combine different spices in different proportions, each and every proportion, each and every permutation and combination of those spices will be different. And that's why when you eat Indian food in one restaurant, and if you might order that dish somewhere else, or you might have it at someone's home, it will taste entirely different, even if it's using the same spices, because the spice combinations will make a massive difference. And because each dish contains so many different spices and so many different combinations, you will come up with a whole new flavor combination. And that's where spices can make and set aside or set apart an Indian dish from its counterparts. It will taste completely different. So that's where spices make a dish more interesting and flavorful. In terms of health, it is very, very, every single spice has its own health benefits. And each and every spice helps digestion. That's number one. And Ayurveda is founded on the principles of digestion. So what you're trying to achieve, according to Ayurveda, is better digestion, Better digestive fire, which is your Agni. And the way to do that, one of the principles of doing that is by having spices, cooking with spices and drinking spices. So it helps digestion, but each and every spice also has other benefits. So for example, ginger in particular is very good for inflammation. Cinnamon in particular is very good for blood sugar. Black pepper has so many benefits, including metabolism, inflammation, detoxification, so many different things. So each spice, saffron is known for its sleep, as a sleep sort of herb, or sorry, sleep sort of spice, because it helps you sleep better. It helps you relax. Nutmeg, again, helps you relax and sleep and really works on the mind. So all these spices, you should think of them as not your flavor cabinet, only your flavor cabinet, but also your medicine cabinet.
Yeah. And it's so exciting that you can play with these natural spices to kind of tackle issues that you have within your body. It obviously will take a longer than a medicine in a pharmacy, but I guess it's so exciting that it has, you know, the same benefits. One of the things that you mentioned is digestion. I'd love to hear why is digestion important to begin with?
Digestion is the key to everything. So 90% or some crazy statistic like that of diseases are caused by digestive issues. And digesting food, I mean, basically what you eat is what you are. Now that's what we've heard a lot of, and it is sort of like that, but it's also what you absorb. And if your digestion is not working correctly, you won't be able to digest the food. And therefore, you won't be able to let it out the other side properly, which is as important. The elimination of toxins is as important as what you're consuming. And secondly, you won't be able to absorb it properly. So if your digestion isn't working properly, it will affect everything in your body, because how you function, food is energy, right? So what you do every day and how we move and what we do and how we breathe and the energy we have is all what we eat. A lot of it is what we eat. And therefore, if you're consuming something and not absorbing the nutrients from it, how are you going to produce the right vitamins and energy that you need in order to function? Okay, that's a very basic thing. You might be able to absorb some of it and all of it, all of that sort of stuff. But ultimately, if your digestion is impacted, your system of detoxification and absorption is impacted. That's why it's very important. And secondly, digestion is affected. The way that digestion affects all diseases, and most diseases are caused by an issue in digestion. In the same way, digestion issues are caused by stress. So actually, the ultimate end game is that if you have any stress in your life, or that some sort of stress that's impacting the chemical balances or imbalances in your body, then that's the root cause of all disease.
Mm.
So digestion is very, very important. It's how you digest your food, how you eliminate food. I mean, when you're bloated, when you're sitting in a dinner and you're feeling bloated and hot, you know, swollen or whatever you're feeling, you can't sit there and feel happy. You're kind of like just focusing on how you're feeling. So if your digestion isn't functioning correctly, how do you function on a daily basis? It's very, very hard. And these days, we're seeing such a rise in gut health issues and, you know, gut health or digestion, well, especially gut health. If you look that up as a hashtag on Instagram, it's like massively trending. There's so many more probiotic companies or gut XYZ companies. And why is that? It's because digestion is being impacted so much. People are eating out all the time. People are stressed. People are eating at odd times. All of these things impact digestion, but ultimately it's stress. And it may not be a kind of stress that you realize is stress. You may just be functioning normally, and that normal function of yours might be high adrenaline, high cortisol, which means you are in fight or flight mode, which means you are not in your parasympathetic, but you are in your sympathetic mode. And all of that is sort of jargon, but actually what it means is that you're in your stress system. And you do not, and you cannot really function on a daily basis by being in your stress system all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And living in a city, being constantly on alert, having these mini stresses in the morning and then continuing your day and having coffee or whatever it is, it's raising those stress hormones slowly but surely every single hour. And then if you're, you know, if you're not breathing correctly and you're not calming your system down in any way, and you're constantly on that sort of rush, you're high, then that is your stress system. And that ultimately over time, it may not impact you immediately, but over time, it might impact you, might impact your digestion, and you'll see it coming out in other ways, which you won't realize are caused by stress.
Yeah. You spoke about gut health being a popular, you know, a trending topic on Instagram. There are a lot of people that are taking supplements and not necessarily focusing on their food intake, but like, you know, taking all of these supplements. What are your thoughts between that and actually eating fresh, wholesome food?
Okay, so my thoughts on that are that food, there's no replacement for, firstly. However, a lot of people don't realize that our food is more depleted of vitamins and minerals than it once was, maybe 20 years ago, maybe 50 years ago, maybe 100 years ago, and definitely from the point when Ayurveda came about. So our soil is depleted far more in vitamins and minerals than it once was. Therefore, you don't get everything that you need from your food. And secondly, the food that you eat isn't coming straight to your plate. It's going through a number of maybe weeks or months or days in between. And therefore, you're not having those. That's also causing that slight depletion in vitamins and minerals. So actually, you want to be having some sort of supplements to make sure that you're accounting for what you're not getting from your food. Mm-hmm. However, everybody and every single person will need different things. So it's important to get it checked. And to listen to your body. If I'm feeling tired every day and lethargic, not able to get out of bed, then that's my body telling me something. So whether I do tests or whatever I do, I need to figure out what my body is telling me. I might be low in iron. I might be low in vitamin D. I might be low in, or my thyroid might be not be functioning correctly. It could and be a number of things. It's worth checking those things out. And it's also important to know that actually to live optimally, you do want to be supplementing in some sort of way as well. So if you're feeling okay, that's fine. But how do you feel your best? Obviously, mm-hmm. eat well. Obviously, live in a place where you're not stressed out all the time. Maybe get away because that will reduce cortisol. That will make you relax. But at the same time, to live optimally, you want to be having supplements that will help your body function better. If your hair has falling out, then maybe you're low on vitamin B. Mm-hmm. If you're not feeling happy, maybe you're not producing serotonin, which means that your B's are low because serotonin can be produced by the B vitamins. So a lot of these hormones are produced by the vitamins that you have. Now, if you're not able to eat the right things and maybe you don't have a diet rich in X, Y, and Z, and therefore you're not getting the B's or the D's or whatever you need, then you won't be feeling happy. But actually, are you also absorbing those things? Your body might not be able to absorb certain vitamins, mm-hmm. or your digestion might be impacted, so you're not absorbing properly. It could be a number of things. So finding out what the issue is will allow you to personally be diagnosed individually.
Yeah, so interesting. Thank you for listening to the Ikivi podcast. If you are enjoying listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikivi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode. I'd love to talk about Ayurveda and what kind of excited you to get into that. And I wanted to talk about how on your book you have Ayurvedic rituals for happiness. I thought that that was so interesting, and I'd love to hear what those rituals are, in if you can kind of summarize or briefly explain to us what that actually means.
Sure. Before I do that, one more thing I was going to say about your previous question is that, going back to food, it is very important to have fresh foods and whole foods rather than processed foods. And that's one thing. That's a blanket.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Please replace all those like processed foods with whole foods. And by that, I mean having things that are, you know, vegetables cooked, whatever it is that you're eating cooked, fresh, whole, rather than having a packet that mm-hmm. you're adding hot water to or something. So that's, and also having, you know, more grains. Having things that you can just simple, that can be simply cooked rather than things that look very complex as well. And that's the, also one more thing to note there is that apply the 80-20 rule wherever you go. So if 20% of the time you're out and you're having fun and you're having a bit of alcohol and you're having processed foods, that's fine. But what are you doing 80% of that time, of the time? And that's what matters.
People say a lot about, you know, rice and rice being like extra polished and it not being great, and you should choose a different alternative. So there are alternative foods for, I mean, for every type of food, there is an alternative. What are your thoughts on that?
On rice specifically?
Yeah, rice specifically.
Okay.
Or, yeah.
So rice is a white food, I guess, and you can get brown rice. And I used to have a lot of brown rice, and I do like black rice as well. There's lots of types of rice. Ayurveda specifically talks about having white rice because it's very easily digestible. Mm. So if you're going by Ayurveda, you should have white rice, whereas brown rice is harder to digest. However, I still think a balance of both is fine. I also think that don't have too much rice because it can spike your blood sugar. And actually, if you look at the highest rate of diabetes in India, it's in Kerala, which is surprising because Kerala is also where Ayurveda is prolific and yeah. where it sort of comes from. So it's bizarre. and actually, Ayurvedic food is full of like coconut oil and coconut, just freshly grated coconut in foods. So how can Kerala yeah. have the highest rate of diabetes? It's because they have mountains of rice.
Mm.
But they do have a lot. So I'm not talking about, you know, 5 spoons a day. I'm talking about having a big pile of rice. So don't overdo the rice, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
However, rice is very easy on the stomach to digest. And that's why khichdi is such a Ayurvedic dish. Khichdi is a combination of split mung beans and rice in half usually, with some ghee and some spices and some turmeric. And actually, that's one of the most Ayurvedic dishes because also to digest protein, which mung beans are mostly protein, you do need a little bit of, you do need some carbs to digest that protein. Mm. And a balance is always good. So I do often just have mung beans, but having that combination of rice and mung beans is actually very Ayurvedic and very easy to digest, very wholesome and good for every dosha. So it's tri-doshic. So yeah, that's what my thoughts on rice are. Definitely have everything, but have it in moderation. There's no evil food. I mean, I would say sugar is probably not the best thing, but even that, you know, Ayurveda talks about all the 6 tastes and one of them is the taste of sugar, the taste of sweet. And there's nothing wrong with having that. It's just when you overdo it, you know, are you having that one piece of chocolate or are you having that whole chocolate bar? And are you having that chocolate bar plus a dessert? Or do you know what I mean? So you've got to work with your own body, but also work with moderation and balance and what gives you balance.
Yeah.
And what are you having? Are you having things in balance? Are you having that one sweet or is that sweet causing you to have 5 more? And that's where, you know, my problem lies a lot in, once you start that sweet taste, I want more. And that's why I try not to start the sweet taste because I know I'll want more.
And also, doesn't it have different impacts on different body types? Because I've spoken to a nutritionist in the past, and for me, it was milk products and sugar that would have an impact on my body as compared to rice, for example, you know? Does that, so it's kind of identifying what you feel rather.
And also nowadays it's become very, very popular for people to wear the blood sugar monitors to monitor how the blood sugar is impacted by what they eat. And therefore they can self-design their own menu and see, oh, actually oats takes it up by this much. And if I have oats with more fiber and more nuts and maybe something else, then maybe my blood sugar won't spike that much. Or if I'm having rice, it spikes a lot. But if I'm having rice after having some beans and some lentils and some other salad, then maybe it doesn't spike as much. I mean, that's all sort of also maybe a known thing, but it might raise your blood sugar less than somebody else's. Mm-hmm. So it's important to realize what is affecting you.
Yeah.
You don't have to wear the blood sugar monitor. It's just about being aware
of
how you also feel. Energetically, how are you feeling after a bowl of rice? Are you feeling lethargic?
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us Ayurvedic rituals for happiness. Yes.
So Ayurvedic ritual for happiness. Okay, so my second book is called Prajna, Pragya, which is the Sanskrit word for ultimate wisdom. And really the book is about spirituality, about finding your own happiness and how do you use these daily morning, afternoon, evening rituals to bring about more happiness. And what I mean by that is that when you are going through a normal happy phase in life and you're okay and everything's fine, these rituals, whether it's waking up and doing a bit of breath work, maybe doing a headstand, maybe doing some yoga, maybe doing a run, whatever it is, that is your ritual. And then eating maybe an hour after that. And then maybe your other ritual would be doing a 5-minute meditation before you sleep or journaling. These rituals will just make your day that much better and actually provide that sense of routine and ritual in your day, which will just make you feel happier. Because you're starting the morning off better. You're ending the day with something mindful and gratitude. You know, there's nothing better that can replace that. However, when you're going through a down phase and things are not happy and suddenly something happens and you're still going back your same day with those same rituals, those rituals will inject a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning in everything that you're doing and will bring you back to you and give you that time to actually reflect and make you happier. So you might be going, suddenly something might happen in life which will cause stress, pain, heartache, anxiety. And the rituals that you do on a daily basis, those things will provide you with the guidance and the grounding that you need to get through that phase. And that's where in my book, I call this a toolbox. Create your own toolkit. You know, what makes you happy? If every morning, you know, walking halfway to work, so taking the train halfway and walking to work is what makes you happy, that could be a ritual, you know. Seeing a friend once a week, that can be part of your ritual toolkit. I mean, you know, we can see friends every day, but, you know, whatever it is, it could be sitting in the sun and making sure you get some vitamin D every single, maybe every 4 days, maybe because you don't really get time to do that. Doing a yoga class once a week or starting the morning with breath work every single morning. It could be anything, making yourself a cup of chai and actually sitting there and boiling your tea together with milk and really just inhaling the spices and sitting down for like 10 minutes, even if it's just 10 minutes. And for those 10 minutes, you're with your cup of chai, maybe you're writing something, maybe you're just looking out of the window, maybe you're without your phone. Maybe that's your ritual of the day. And that brings you that sense of peace and calmness and brings you back to you. So the toolkit of rituals that I talk about is basically to allow you to glide through life better and not feel like you're walking through mud. And when you are feeling like you're walking through mud, those rituals provide you with some sense of happiness. And also realizing, this is another thing I speak about in my book, which is what's the science behind some of these things. So for example, if you're running or you're doing breath work or you're doing yoga, you're producing endorphins. And endorphins are happy hormones. So even without realizing, you are creating the happy hormones that you need. And that's why after exercise, everyone says they feel better. So if you're going through a really hard time in life, exercise will just have a greater impact because you're suddenly lifting yourself up by doing that exercise, by doing that run, by doing those yoga class, whatever it is that you're doing, you're producing endorphins. And being in touch with nature, for example, in the Japanese culture, again, I write about this in my book, there's something called Shinrin Yoku, which is forest bathing. Mm-hmm. And why do they do that? Why do they immerse themselves in the forest? And just like that, why do you feel more peaceful when you're surrounded by nature? So going for that walk in the park, making sure you get out and maybe do that holiday on the beach or wherever it is that you like, taking a forest walk maybe once a week or walk in the woods once a week. Why does that make us feel better? And there's actual reasons for that. And actually, if you go back to the simplistic root of everything, Ayurveda talks about how we came from nature and we're not born into it. And actually, we came from nature. Therefore, going back to it, we feel very much at home and at peace. So breathing, for example, can help have more oxygen in the brain. You feel happier. You know, why is that? There's so many reasons for that. Breathwork can calm you. Breathwork is the quickest way for the physiology to change the psychology. And you're by doing all these things, these physical exercises, whatever you're doing, you're using the physiology to change the psychology. And what does gratitude do? There's so much research on what gratitude does and how it can help shift the brain pattern and how we think. So if I'm having a really bad year, by doing three things I'm grateful for every day, I may not feel those things, but I'm writing them down. Slowly but surely, over time, I'm changing my thought pattern to look out for those things that I'm grateful for, to be more grateful for, say, seeing the sun than just taking it for granted, to be more grateful for that stretch that I did and taking time to do those things, because I know that those things will make me feel better. And then my gratitude list will get longer.
Does Ayurveda talk about all of this? Like, is that how it's detailed out?
No, it doesn't talk about, say, for example, running or gratitude, but it does talk, and it doesn't talk about endorphins. So what I think modern science and modern science has taught us is that actually all these principles of Ayurveda from years ago are now being proven by science, if you know what I mean. So why is it that breath work or yoga or those sorts of things help? I mean, science is now proving those things. Ayurveda talks about a lot of things. Abhyanga, for example, is another practice I haven't spoken about yet. And Abhyanga is self-massage. And that's a really wonderful thing to do no matter where you live, but especially in the colder climate, because you're providing lubrication to the joints. It's like, you know, if there's a wooden stick and it's not bending properly, if there's something that's not bending properly and then you put oil on it, it'll bend better, right? So if you're running and you're functioning in the cold, you're feeling like cold. But if you oil those joints and massage them, you'll actually be, you're providing the sort of lubrication that you need in order to function better. And hopefully, and you're also prolonging the process of aging, because the cold, for example, the root cause of things like osteoarthritis and those sorts of things can be linked back to years and years of maybe functioning in the cold and not being wrapped up properly. That's one of the reasons. It could be anything. But by oiling your joints, by staying warm, by doing things like sauna and providing heat to the body, it's all helping you age less faster in the future.
Yeah. I love that you kind of put it together as having a toolbox. I think that that's so, it's such a nice way to put it, because we have these things that we just kind of do without thinking too much about it. Like exercising, for example, I love to exercise only because one of the reasons is because it makes me feel good soon after. But it's just something that we don't mindfully think about and actually do when we're feeling certain things. Whereas if we have a toolbox of these multiple things that we can do and we're feeling stressed or we're feeling anxious about something and we just have this like written down, and, you know, of 10 things in our toolbox and just pick one of these and just do it, and it automatically makes you feel better. It's so much easier to implement.
Making sure that you can actually change those things that you focus on. So for 4 weeks, you might be doing headstands, and then you might adapt that and add to it and do something more in your practice or whatever it is. You know, you might be doing that 5K run, but you're actually my knees are being impacted. Let me change that to something else. So you can flow with it, just like, you know, you can flow with life. But anyway, sorry, carry on with your question.
No, my question is, how can, somebody who's not necessarily, or our listeners who have not necessarily, you know, focused in on balance and well-being, how can in this really fast-paced world with a lot of, you know, noise and difficulties, how can somebody kind of implement or adopt some kind of Ayurvedic practice, whether it's, or if it's pranayama, something that is, because it tends to become overwhelming as well, right? What can somebody do to start with, just to kind of introduce themselves into this kind of world of self-care?
So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be Ayurvedic. Self-care doesn't have to be Ayurvedic. But I would say, look at firstly your starting point. So is your starting point not going to, not exercising at all or not doing any yoga? Is your starting point not, you know, eating out all the time? What is your starting point? If your starting point is you do some sort of yoga and exercise and you're quite happy with that, then maybe you can increase that and change it up and maybe go to the sauna or doing some sort of massage and putting oils on your body. What is your starting point? I think that's the first thing. And secondly, understanding that Ayurveda is a way of life and there are many principles that you can apply from it. So you don't have to take a practice and implement that, but rather look at the principles of Ayurveda. And what are the main principles? The key principles are both around digestion. So what helps digestion? Number one, having gaps between meals. So not over snacking. Number two, having your largest meal slightly earlier in the day. So ideally at lunchtime. Obviously, not everyone's lifestyle is conducive to that, and that's okay. So then work with your lifestyle. Can you do a slightly smaller dinner? You know, adapt your lifestyle to what you can do. So a slightly smaller dinner and slightly earlier. So are you leaving enough time between when you eat and when you sleep? Because actually you don't want your sleep to be impacted by the digestion process is still going on. You want your sleep to be very, very sound and deep. And therefore you don't want to be digesting when you're sleeping. So
what is that ideal gap between dinner and sleep?
The ideal gap, it's about 4 hours. So eating at, say, 5 or 6, I mean, that may be too early for people. But even if you're eating at, you know, and then going to sleep by 10, but if you're sleeping by 11, 11:30, which many of us do, then eating by 6:30, 7 latest. So try and leave at least 4 hours. If you get really hungry, then have a drink, have a hot milk with some spices. And that brings me through to the third principle, which is spices in your food and your drinks. So helping your own body by having spices, having ginger in hot water, having spices in your tea, just like I do chai. I mean, every chai spices. So having all of that and then waking up and doing some sort of movement before you eat. And so not having breakfast first thing when you wake up, rather having some sort of warm water, whether it's with spices or just by itself or some lemon if you like. I don't often do lemon, but lemon is a good detoxifier. Depends on your body again. If you're suffering from arthritis late in age and you don't want to be having lemon. It's not like a blanket. This is good for everyone. But I would say spices are generally very, very good. So having maybe the Ayurvedic tea, which is hot coriander seeds, cumin seeds and fennel seeds and hot water, warm water first thing in the morning if you want. And then starting and then doing some breath work or some movement or some running or whatever it is that you want to do before you eat, ideally. Again, work with your lifestyle. Can you wake up slightly early and do something, do some sort of movement? Maybe walk to work rather than taking the train or stop halfway and then take a 15-minute walk. Doing some sort of movement and it will energize you or make you feel happier. And it will provide you with that sense of movement before to help your digestion, because that also ignites the Agni. And in Ayurveda, the digestive fire is called the Agni. So you want to ignite that. And so think of your digestion before you do everything and think of the happiness of your digestion before you think of the happiness of your tongue. Eating out and being with friends and having the odd not so great meal, that's okay. That's completely fine. But like I said before, it's about what you do 80% of the time and trying to change your habits over time. So looking at the principles of Ayurveda, I would say, are more important, and looking at your starting point. Are you doing some sort of movement? What is that movement? Are you breathing properly? Are you happy? If you're not happy, then what can you do to bring about more happiness? And, you know, oiling is really, really important generally. So doing some sort of oil massage, maybe massage. I only use oils on my face. I don't use any moisturizer. So using oils, massaging the face, maybe massaging the hands, especially in the cold, the joints, maybe the knees. That's probably what I would say start off with. I'm sure there's 100 more things I could come up with, but I would just say looking at food and looking at whole foods and looking at your food patterns and instilling better practices for that.
Amazing. I love these tips, and it's actually making me excited to pay more attention to the food that I'm eating and enjoying it a lot more, rather than kind of taking it for granted, taking these tastes for granted, but like really appreciating the spices that go into it. Sometimes I feel like with Indian food, we just kind of add a bunch of things and then it just becomes like extremely heavy and very masala-fied. But there is so much to each individual spice that is quite exciting, which I'm excited to kind of learn more about and kind of feel that. So that's exciting. But anyway, that's a side note. What do you have coming up that our listeners can look forward to? Where can they find you? All of that.
I have, I've got a chai brand, as you might know, chai spice brand. So it's chai spices, coconut sugar in different flavors. And I have a new rebrand coming up. So the branding's changing completely, literally this week. And I'm in, I don't know, 80 odd cafes in the UK, but I'm expanding a lot next year. That's the one thing. And then the second thing, which is a really big thing, is in April 2024, my third book is out, The Book of Chai, History, Stories, and Recipes, which is already available on all sorts of websites and Amazon for pre-order. I'll be doing a few events around that time in April. And I will be doing a couple of retreats, which I haven't fully announced yet, but abroad, I'll be doing two retreats. And that's it for now. I'm not doing anything here in London at the moment in terms of events.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Meera, for joining us today and having this very insightful conversation. I feel like we had this very packed 35 minutes or so conversation with so much information that is going to take me some time to digest. But thank you so much for sharing insight. And we look forward to your third book and look forward to seeing what you have coming up next.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikivi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikivi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikivi.